Item number 167, please.
167, presentation from the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization Chair on Education for Sustainable Development.
Great. Well, we're very pleased to welcome Dr. Hopkins and Dr. Smith here this afternoon to talk about this collaboration. Charles Hopkins is the chair of UNESCO's Education for Sustainable Development Project, working in collaboration with the Greater Portland Sustainability Education Network, working to educate teachers about sustainability and therefore everyone else. So we appreciate your work. You're here to update us today on the work that's being done and on how Portland can be a constructive participant in this partnership, and we're very glad that you're both here. So welcome.
Thank you very, very much. I'll take about 10 minutes to paint a larger global picture, and then Kim will take about 10 minutes to talk more specifically in the Portland context.
Okay? Great.
So that's sort of the plan, and then we leave a bit of time in case there are some questions for us. Okay. So in that larger picture, I think most people are aware that we are now moving globally from the Millennium Development Goals and trying to come up with new global vision. It's called the World We Want, and we will be creating, and countries are sort of voting on the new Sustainable Development Goals. Now, the problem is that at the international level, things are moving fairly slowly. You know, it's into negotiations and so on, back and forth. But the really good news is that at the local level, at the regional, the city level, the state level, things are moving much more quickly because it isn't a win-lose thing. It's not like we're giving up our coal-fired plants if you'll give up yours. It's much more at the local level. And so what this program is called, The World We Want, and there are now 17 large new development goals that they are working on. But inherent within them is the role of education, public awareness, training programs in general. And the largest gathering of heads of ministries of education, ministers, deputy ministers, secretaries of education, just happened recently in Nagoya in Japan, where they came together to form the Aichi Nagoya Declaration on how countries should be using public awareness, public education, understanding, training programs, both in the public and private sector, to try and move forward. Kim was the head of the U.S. delegation there, and is just finishing the report to the State Department on U.S. role within that. So as we move forward out of that declaration, and you have a copy of it there forward, it is one of the issues is that we should be revisiting and looking at the purpose of our education programs, and that's not just K through 12, but it is public awareness, public education, etc. And there is a roadmap that countries have agreed to, and I'll come back to that in a moment. Move forward, the idea of education, public awareness, and training first emerged in Rio in 92, because they realized in order to move forward and address issues, you need an educated, knowledgeable public. So there were four components to it. One is access to quality basic education. I mean, there are still roughly the student population of the United States for whom there is no school in the world. And then think of the number of students who mentally have dropped out of school. They may be there, but it's not serving them well. So that's one thing. The second thing is reorienting our existing education. It's largely our most educated countries that are leaving the deepest ecological footprints. So the idea of repurposing, rethinking, revaluing, and so on. But a large one is this public awareness and understanding. It's extremely difficult for cities or countries to even move forward if you don't have the political support. And even corporations, it's no use building a Prius if no one will buy it. So we need a knowledgeable citizenry in order to move forward. And that's part of this, what we'll be talking about now. Now, there are different levels of implementing this. Unfortunately, one choice that too many are making is to ignore the idea and just focus on math and language and the K through 12, et cetera, you know. But there are the events and so on. And if you look at this as working your way up, learning about sustainable development, and then the idea of repurposing education. For instance, in the province of Manitoba, the goal of the education system is to produce people who will live in a sustainable manner. Okay? In Finland, and so on, we can go through. But sort of the highest level that we can envision now is aligning our public awareness and education and so on and training programs within the goals of the community itself. And we refer to this as a regional center of expertise in education for sustainable development, of which Portland is one. Now, the idea is this. If you look at it, there's two groups of people that we try to bring together. This is a program that started in 2005 and is now spread around the world. On the one hand, we are trying to bring together the messengers in the community, so formal education from preschool through to higher education, together with NGOs in the community, museums, science centers, etc., those who inform the general public, together with the people who know what are the social, environmental, and economic issues facing the community now and what's coming. So urban planners, it could be researchers in universities, it could be the private sector. So that how can we get that information into the hands of the messengers, so that our school systems and so on are talking about locally based real issues. Cities and towns are saying, what is it that we wish every citizen knew about our own goals and what we are trying to do in the city? And how can we align in a collaborative way, instead of all these random acts of sustainability going on, how can we bring the messengers together to work in a synergized way with the urban planners, the city, and so the it could be higher education researchers, etc. So that's the big picture. And if we look down and below at the outcomes, where we've been doing this for roughly 10 years, we find that students within the schools are much more knowledgeable. They take interest because they're being taught the core curriculum, but it's based in local reality. It's place-based, it's hands-on, and engaging of students in actually doing things. Now, these regional centers, there are roughly 135 of them. And it is a project of the United Nations University. And
is that 135 in the world or in the United States?
Yeah.
And how many do we have in the United States?
Four, I believe. Right.
We don't count Texas.
Yeah.
Sorry, Texas is no longer active, so we have three,
and Portland is one of them.
Yes, mm-hmm. Portland.
Yes.
And I'll explain some of the history on that.
Good. Sorry to interrupt.
Now, one of the things you're.
Can you go back for one second?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things that the regional centers are trying to achieve, the UNESCO's Global Action Program, we had a UN decade of education for sustainable development that went from 2005 to 2014. It came to a close in Aichi, Nagoya, where Kim was, and the new program that's replacing it is called the UNESCO Global Action Program on Education for Sustainable Development. Mm-hmm. Now, it has five priority action areas within it. One is advancing policy. Okay. It is so very, very difficult to try and move forward on, for people to do things if the if there isn't a policy that funds them, gives permission, and so on. And so we're looking at how can we embed policy in programs. The second one is transforming whole institutions. Instead of it just be greening a school or greening a university, it's looking into what gets taught, what gets evaluated, what gets funded, etc. Or a private sector, a business, or a city. How do you look at this in its entirety, in its purpose? The third one is improving the capacity of educators, higher education included. That's my particular role within UNESCO, is reorienting teacher education. The fourth one is working with youth and building youth councils and so on. And the last one is the one that really applies to why we're here, and that's looking at how to build more sustainable communities. What is the role of education, public awareness, and so and training programs in trying to build more sustainable communities? So that's the fifth one, is to say. Now, as we point out, there are 100, and you know, it's very difficult to see, but that is a world map, and on it you have the various ones, and of which Portland is fairly new, and yet it is quickly risen in the visibility on the international level. Part of it, and just in the few days that I've been here and meeting with different groups, I can see that it is kind of embedded in the DNA of the community. There is a much larger concern that is here. And so I'll turn it over to Kim to carry on. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. We need to go forward.
Oh, here, I'll do it.
Where's
here?
The little arrow, though?
Yeah, go forward. I don't know why it's going backward on this one.
All right. So, yes, we are an RCE, though I do want to identify that we have a local name, the Greater Portland Sustainability Education Network. We felt that captured a little bit more what our goal is, that to create a multi-sector network focused on, I know you were talking about training teachers, but it truly is formal, as he said, mm-hmm. informal and non-formal education, so also working with the media. And so one of the things that Portland has done that is quite distinct than a lot of the other RCEs around the world, there are many structures that are different models, but because we have very purposely integrated, if you go, we have the handout on Gypsum and the Gap, so we say Gypsum, you can link on our Gypsum page and see all the partners. There, we have partners from all across the sector. Some are still siloed, you know, and so one of the benefits that we have already, so 2 years ago when we first started to apply, Mayor Hales, there was a letter of in the application, I think, that was sent to you guys early on. And so with Multnomah County and Metro and lots of different folks came together and said, you know what, we really can increase our collective impact if we created a network like this to have a more sustainable future, hopefully just, equitable, you know, healthy, those kinds of core things too. Because we really are an E4 model, E4 education, environment, economics, equity, all right? So our core main goals, you can see there, I'll get that down here. Within the work, one of the main things, and even coming today and meeting with you, we really wanna make sure, I mean, we understand what's coming from the Global Action Program, okay? So I have this document, yes, thank you for recognizing. So I led the U.S. delegation to the UNESCO conference, and they said, RCEs, you've proven yourselves for 10 years. Portland, you're new, but man, you've proven yourselves. How can you help implement the gap, right? Well, that's fine, but really we want to make sure that the work that we're doing is aligning with your initiatives, making sure, you know, what's the Portland plan? You know, what's going on with our climate action plans, metro level, all of this. The greater Portland region, our region, are the four counties. So Multnomah, Clackamas, and Clark, and Washington, all right? So when we say Greater Portland, we're using the data, classic, you know, intertwined coalition for livable future are those four counties. So we want to ask that for you, from, you know, with you, it's like, how do we align How can these kinds of networks increase the collective impact of our region by working with some of the things you're trying to do? How would we be able to leverage existing resources with these cross-sector partnerships? How can we step outside those silos? And I know a lot of us are already working on this kind of model, but this is where the UN came in and said, this is something that is proven to work. And where can we find some synergies? We all are, right, tight for cash, tight for resource, tight for time. So finding ways that we can create win-wins, collective impact through efficiencies, really finding some efficiencies. And, of course, we have a strong partnership with Hands on Greater Portland, and a lot of you I know do volunteer work. So how can we also increase civic engagement? So those are our five main objectives that Gypsum established when we started. I just want to give you a little bit of idea about the structure, so where you might fit in, but also so you know who's doing the work. We have over 120 organizational partners already, 300 individual members. And so around, you can see all the stakeholders. Really, it's all of our community, right? But these are the voices that have come in and advised how to set up our work. We have a coordinating committee, about 15 people that actually represent all the sectors, and really aligning, you know, identifying the bylaws and working on projects. But the four core circles out there, those are the subcommittees that really I'm the coordinator for the RCE or for Gypsum, but I really depend on this team to coordinate the partnerships through governance, doing the promotion of events through outreach, and you'll see that, developing programs and trainings, and working with the research and development folks. Generally, that's coming out of higher ed, so PSU, et cetera. Okay? UP, Portland Community College, is a big partner. They've been funding us so far. Checking time here. I see folks coming in. So you have this. This is a document. You guys are able, you know, ask questions around this, but I also want you to be able to reflect on these later, so I don't need to go through every point, but I want you to see what types of tangible tasks are being done, right? So the governance committee really has the funding tasks in addition to managing such a complex relationship. And I tell you, one of the biggest challenges, you know, there are other RCEs around the world who their challenge is building things from scratch. Ours is making a container big enough for how much is actually happening, because we already have so many players. So the governance folks are trying to do that. Terms of programs, lots of trainings, exhibits, forums that we've had already, because we've already been actually kind of building over the... We're formally accepted for a year now. And then Hands on Greater Portland, we've been doing volunteer projects. Proud of our virtual youth conference as well. Portland, several Portland schools have been involved with that. If you're interested, of course, the outreach. If you would like some more things tweeted, which you guys do plenty of, but there you go. But we're really happy to have all the partners actually on a GIS map that our students at PCC are managing. And then Metro has funded a grant to actually do a full asset map of who are all the sustainability providers across our region, and how can we match up, how can we find each other, how can we actually do a network analysis to show that we have actually increased our collective impact, all right? So that committee really is responsible for that big grant, and we have that for the next 2 years. Finally, just to put it in context, the way the UN generally puts the United States, we are with Europe, but UNESCO and the UNU has us in the RCEs, the Americas. So there's sometimes some collaboration going between, you know, Canada, so North America, Central, and South America. So if you look at the map again, you'll see where the RCEs are located. And our next, so we try to replicate good practices and support each other and learn from each other. RCE Grand Rapids in Michigan, their mayor is actually their lead. It's actually in their city. So anyway, the next RCEs of the Americas meeting is in Grand Rapids, by the way, if you're interested. So we made some commitments. We actually submitted some commitments to UNESCO for the Global Action Program. And Chuck said what those five were. You saw that map. We can check off number one. We're here. We're talking. This is good. Number two, we're really trying to, you know, formalize Gypsum and then working with PCC, seeing all of the partners. Hopefully, PCC is doing tons of whole. You guys know. You know how much PCC does around transformation.
Well, Dr. Smith, you work at Portland Community College, right?
I should probably have said that. Introduce. I am an environmental sociologist, and I'm a sociology professor at Portland Community College, Sylvania. I've been there 19 years. Yes, thank you, in addition to being coordinator. So anyway, the rest of it, you can see what we're trying to do.
We have a question. So is Portland Community College has been taking the lead on this?
Yes.
And is that going to continue, or what are the next steps?
That's a very good question. They want to be a core partner, but they've been funding it all individually, but there's 120 different partners, and this is their bridge year, and they're like, okay, they've been giving me a course release to run, one course release to run an organization the size of four counties and with all these goals. But at least they've been funding us for a while, and they are saying it in June that we have to reorganize and find new funding structures.
It's pretty remarkable that a so-called junior college or community college has been taking such an amazing role in this international organization.
Well, PC, you know, community colleges are an important nexus, right, between all the sectors. K-12, higher ed, also industry, workforce training, all of that. So in many ways, while sometimes community colleges don't have as high of status, they certainly model this network. And so it's worked very well, actually, having them be one of the core leads.
And do you think Portland State University is going to want to step up and help out?
Well, they've always been a partner from the beginning. We had our first meetings there. And they provide staff capacity, but they haven't provided funding. But we'll be looking into that more. Other questions? You can see these are our core goals, and I think that actually brings us to the questions. Anything else?
I have a really big, dumb question, which is, when you're educating people for sustainable development, what are you educating them about? What do you want them to learn?
Well, if we go back to those four areas, one of them is trying to improve the quality of the education system itself. And so quite often what we do is embed local social, environmental, and economic issues. I've just finished some research in 16 countries, the high-scoring PISA countries. These are the countries that are most respected in their school systems. And where regions have taken this approach of using education for sustainable development as a delivery method, their test scores have gone up, the children are better prepared, and so on. So you're asking a really good question. That first one is access and retention and quality education. The second one, though, is reorienting. Why are we educating, and therefore what should be taught, what should be tested, what should be funded? How do we prepare people more for the world they're going to inherit?
Okay.
That's just informal education. Then there's the training and the public awareness and the building part, which I think is more applicable for cities, because you have the formal education component. But it's the city itself that has a very hard time moving forward if you don't have political support.
May I answer a little bit more? So from the professor hat, too, we've been working on a lot of this. Like, is it curriculum? Is it something that's embedded in a discipline? Really, it's not. It's not just, you know, let's have a sustainability education class. It's how can we infuse sustainability across all disciplines with skill sets that citizens need, that youth need, lifelong learners need, critical thinking, principles and ethics of sustainability. Right? These larger kinds of questions that one might find discover in the humanities, in the social sciences as well. Not just the STEM classes, although those are essential, right, in terms of technical green jobs, all of that. But really, the broader kinds of things around problem solving, you know, those types of broader things. What does a sustainable future look like? That question, what the future we want or the world we want. Finland they're doing a huge program now called the Finland We Want. So I'm inviting you to also say, what's the Portland we want.
When I hear the word sustainable, I think about environmental stuff, and because the biggest environmental issue I can think of is climate disruption. Mm-hmm. When I think of educating for sustainable development, I would think about, you know, doing things like telling people it's not enough to eat locally grown food because it can still be carbon intensive. You should eat lots of lentils and less beef. So that's the kind of thing I think of when I think of education for sustainable development. But that's not everybody's definition of sustainability, so I'm still a little fuzzy on what you think of as sustainability and what particular kinds of education are relevant to it.
It varies according to the region or whatever. For instance, in the Middle East, it's one of the huge problems is unemployed youth. You know, so it's how do we better prepare people for the workforce? In other situations in Europe, what is rising now terribly is racism and exclusion with the number of illegal immigrants who are forced in there out of Africa. And in other cases, yes, it's environmental. But you never just do with one. You sort of look at what are the big issues in your region and how can education, public awareness, and training address some of that. They won't address them all, in their entirety. You need policy, you need funding, you need legislation, you know, many different things. But you need to keep the general public on board, and you need that kind of leadership with coming, especially from higher education. Kim, do you want to add to that?
I do. So thank you, because you're also saying what is the content. It's actually a really problematic word. It's actually pretty dated, Education for Sustainable Development. It came out of that 80s development movement. And Dr. Hopkins actually helped create Education for Sustainable Development. I mean, he really helped create the RCEs, and he, thank you. but lots of places, like even in the United States, you're going to hear more often Education for Sustainability or well-being, the words, or resilience. Right? The words are different now, so it's always going to be, we're always emphasizing this too, social sustainability, economic sustainability. It's a problem that people think environment, because it really, what does a sustainable, I know you're all doing this work, so social and economic sustainability is always key in there. So those partners, we're actively working with those groups in Portland and the greater Portland region, not just the environmental groups, not just Intertwine, you know, those kinds of networks. Does that answer your question? Yeah, I know there's more. It's complex. It's complex. And honestly, I don't even really like the word sustainability, because if we think about, you know, what is your goal? What is the future we want to sustain? To just get by? You know, it's like, no, I think we'd like to thrive. Right? I think it's really valuable that we can identify, like, what are these missions that you work so hard in defining? And then how, and again, this isn't education about, like he in his stair steps up, it was not education about sustainability or sustainable development. It's not just learning about the health of the frogs and the scary issues we're facing right now with climate change. It's education for sustainable development. How do we use this mechanism, this tool, to help us all, right, achieve a future that at least we have a vision for, which doesn't guarantee we're going to get there, but goodness, this is a good way to try. Other thoughts?
Oh, Commissioner Fritz, anything else you want to add to this front end of the presentation here?
This is very helpful, and it's wonderful to know that we're one of three out of 138 globally, that Portland is a center for excellence and expertise, and to know that there's this mechanism for the partners to talk to each other. And I know you're presenting at Metro tomorrow. Their grant will enable you to map those assets and connect us all. So I appreciated this conversation, because sustainability is about, it's more than sustainability, it's thriving. And it's looking at not just solar heating and recycling as sustainability concepts, but equity and race and a number of the other challenges that, as you're right, that we talk about all the time. So it's good to know that we have international support for that.
And if I could just reflect back on behalf of UNESCO and United Nations University, I thank you for giving us this moment with you, and I thank you for the work that has gone into the gypsum and what could happen in the future. So thank you very much.
And on a we will be meeting with Jackie Dingfelder and Michael Armstrong with Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and so some more of the kind of nuts and bolts kinds of questions they had asked for a meeting. So we thank you, Amanda, or Commissioner Fritz, for inviting us to City Council as well, because I know you're very busy, so I'm glad we got to meet with you in addition to Michael and Jackie.
Great. Thank you. Thanks very much. Thanks, Commissioner. I don't think we have to take a census with the presentation, but we could just thank them for their leadership and help. Thank you. Good to hear from you, and good to hear that the work continues, so thank you.